Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about the outlook for the global economy. So I've been speaking a lot recently about the potential for a global recession. Are we all facing the prospect of 2023 being miserable and a global recession being inevitable? Or is there a chance that as the interest rate increases start to feed through, that we see inflation coming back down and everything may go back to normal and we can avoid some form of hard landing? So in today's episode, what I want to do is share with you the latest forecasts that have come out from the IMF, looking at each individual country around the world and then looking at the regions and giving a growth forecast for all of those different areas. So we'll go through the data on the latest global indicators. We'll talk about what's happening with monetary policy, inflation, interest rates. And then we'll have a look at the statistics and the forecasts for all of the major economies around the world. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters. So if you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and Amazon shopping links. Now, one of the reasons that there's so much concern about a global recession occurring right now is because following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, we saw a huge spike in the price of energy products and food, and that's caused major problems in many countries around the world, and the globe is still trying to shake off those problems. And this graph, which dates back to January 2019, shows the scale of the problem. And what you can see here is the movements in the price of three key commodities: Brent crude oil, natural gas, and wheat. The blue line shows what's happened to natural gas prices over the last 3 years. And you can see that in 2019, natural gas prices were actually declining. That decline continued through to the middle of 2020 when the COVID pandemic had taken hold. And from that point onwards, we started to see increases in natural gas prices. However, those price increases took off dramatically following Russia's invasion. And prices have remained high throughout the whole of the war, and are forecast to continue staying high all the way through to the end of 2023. And the reason for that is that most of Europe is dependent upon natural gas. The European power industry built lots of power stations that needed natural gas as the raw energy supply. And the main supplier of that gas over the last 10 years has been Russia, because they're the largest exporter of gas. And they built pipelines which supplied all of those countries directly. So it was a very nice arrangement for both the European countries and for Russia. Now, what's happened since the war started is that all of the European countries have made a commitment to stop buying Russian gas. Some of them have actually stopped because they either had their supplies cut off by Russia or they made a conscious decision not to buy any more gas from Russia. But for the rest of the countries, they're in the process of transition. They're moving away from Russian gas, but the problem that many countries have is that it's not easy to be able to find alternative piped gas, and therefore they're having to buy liquefied natural gas, and that involves heavy investment into all of the infrastructure needed to convert the LNG back into natural gas. And so the price of gas globally has gone up dramatically and is likely to stay high for at least the next 12 months. The red line on this graph shows the movement in crude oil prices and follows a very similar pattern. So you can see that in 2019, oil prices were broadly flat. As we went into the pandemic and global demand slowed down, oil prices actually fell. However, as we've come out of the pandemic, oil prices started to rise, and then we saw a spike following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. However, prices have started to come back down as a result of the slowdown in global demand caused by the potential global recession. When you look at the overall picture, oil prices are still higher than they were this time last year or this time the year before, and those high prices are putting pressure on the global economy. And the yellow line shows the movement in wheat prices. You can see that up until the middle of 2020, wheat prices were broadly flat. However, as demand started to increase when we came out of the pandemic, wheat prices started to increase, and there was a real jump in prices after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Now, prices have leveled off a little, but they are still significantly higher than they were this time last year. And that's a major problem for a lot of people around the world, because wheat is a very basic food substance. It's used to produce flour, which is used to make bread, pasta, noodles, and couscous. And those food types make up a big percentage of a lot of people's diet all around the world. And as I've said many times on the channel before, the poorest members of society can't afford a big increase in prices. They don't have spare disposable income. They don't have savings. So when you get even a 5% increase in food prices, it causes a problem for them. But over the course of the last 8 months, we've seen a massive increase in wheat prices, and that is causing a food crisis all around the world. Now, the direct impact of the increase in food and energy prices since the start of the Ukraine war has been that inflation has spiked in many countries around the world. And this chart shows an aggregated view of inflation over the last 22 years. And what this chart shows is that, broadly speaking, in the period between 2000 and 2021, the average rate of inflation across the world was around 3%. Now, there have been some fluctuations around those levels, and the main one historically was back in 2008 when we had the global financial crisis. And you can see from this chart that average rates at that time did increase quite significantly and rose to around 4.5%. So that represented a 50% increase on the long-term average. But if we look at what's happened over the course of the last 18 months, you can see why economists are now very concerned about the global economy, because there has been a dramatic increase in average inflation rates. This is by far the biggest movement that the world has seen at any time over the course of the last 22 years. And as I've discussed before, this movement in inflation isn't 100% contributable to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In 2021, we started to see inflation increasing all around the world due to the fact that demand outstripped supply for most goods. A lot of countries operated strict COVID lockdown policies during 2020, and as those policies started to be released, there was a lot of pent-up demand. People wanted to go out, they wanted to buy things, they wanted to do things. And we saw a combination of a boom in demand and shortages of products, because a lot of companies had closed down their facilities, and so they didn't have any stock to be able to sell into the markets, and that forced prices up. And at the start of 2022, that was the key issue for a lot of countries to bring inflation back under control. But unfortunately, when Russia invaded Ukraine, we saw a huge increase in energy costs and food costs and commodity costs, as we've just discussed. And that meant that inflation went even higher. And you can see from this chart how inflation was pushed to record levels, and that's what's causing major concern. Monetary policy is the term that's used to describe the mechanism used by central banks to control their economies. So if you've got an economy that you want to try to grow, you will generally look to stimulate that economy, firstly by using what's called quantitative easing. And that describes the situation where central banks buy bonds. So they'll go into the market, they'll buy government securities in exchange for cash. And the institutions who are selling those bonds will then use that cash to create more loans. And those loans will help people to finance things, to spend money, and it expands the money supply and therefore should help to grow your economy. And the other way of trying to stimulate your economy and encourage people to spend more is to reduce interest rates. Because firstly, reduced interest rates means that people don't want to hold their money in the bank because they're not getting paid much interest on it, so therefore they'd rather spend it. But secondly, and more importantly, the cost of borrowing goes down. So anybody who was thinking about moving house or buying a car or taking a loan for any purpose at all may think, well, actually the rates are so low that I think I will do that now. So they take the money from the bank, they spend it in the economy, and that helps to grow GDP. And both of those policies have been pursued by many countries over the last couple of years, particularly because of the COVID pandemic. So as we came out of the lockdowns, a lot of central banks were concerned that the economies were going into recession, and they wanted to stimulate that demand, stimulate spending, get people to go out and spend more money and get the economy to grow. But one of the problems with quantitative easing and reducing interest rates is that it often leads to high inflation. And that's exactly what's happened over the course of the last 18 months. And the situation, as we just discussed, has been made a lot worse by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So as it sits right now, inflation is the number one issue for a lot of central banks. And so they're now doing the opposite of quantitative easing. So they're reversing their QE policies, what's called quantitative tightening. So rather than buying bonds, they're selling bonds into the market. And selling those bonds means that they're taking cash from the financial institutions, which means that the money supply should reduce. And at the same time as they're doing that, they're also increasing interest rates. Because when you increase interest rates, firstly, it encourages people to save because they're getting paid more for leaving their money in the bank. But secondly, and most importantly, it increases the cost of borrowing. So it puts people off from taking on that extra mortgage, that extra loan, buying a new car, all of those things. And by doing that, it should reduce demand. And when demand falls, as you'll know if you follow the channel, prices should come down. And this chart shows the monetary policy cycle for the G20 economies. So that's the 20 largest economies in the world. If you follow the channel, you'll know that we talk about the G20 quite a lot. The biggest economy in the world is the USA, followed by China, Japan, Germany, UK. And alongside North America and Europe, there are other countries such as Australia, Brazil, Indonesia, Korea, Russia, Saudi Arabia that make up the mix. So as you can see, this chart dates back to 2007, which is the year before the global financial crisis. And it shows whether or not the G20 has been following an expansionary policy, so quantitative easing. And those periods are represented by cuts in interest rates and policies and are shown here in blue, below the zero line. Or if they've been following a tightening policy, which is when rates are increased and are shown in orange and red here, above the zero line. So what this chart shows is that in 2007, as we got to the top of the market, the G20 had started introducing tightening policies, so they were increasing rates. However, as soon as the global financial crisis hit and caused a major recession, everything went into the opposite direction, and we saw a huge amount of quantitative easing to try to get all of those economies growing again. And you can see from the length of the blue lines that there was a significant amount of QE done at that time. And as we moved forward into 2009, the world started to recover and those policies were reversed. So the G20 then started to increase rates again. And between 2010 and 2018, there was a mixture of tightening and quantitative easing, depending on what was happening on an annual basis. And that's fairly normal for the global economy because you'll always have periods of growth followed by periods of slowdown. So it's fairly common to move between a period of increasing rates into reducing rates and so on. Now, if we look at what happened from 2018 onwards, there was a general slowdown in the global economy that year. So the G20 moved into a period where it was reducing rates. And of course, that was then accentuated by the COVID-19 pandemic. And during that period, many countries around the world reduced their interest rates to virtually zero. And then as we came out of the COVID pandemic, demand started to increase, inflation started to rise, and we saw a lot of the G20 changing their quantitative easing programs. So they weren't actually raising interest rates, but they did change their bond strategies. But if we now look at what's happened over the course of the last 6 months, we can see that there has been a material change. So most of the G20 are now focused on tightening their policies, on bringing down inflation. The only country that's the exception to the rule is Turkey. If you follow the channel, I'm sure you'll be aware that Turkey decided that they didn't agree with the traditional theory that when you have high inflation, you should increase interest rates. And they've been reducing their interest rates for the last 18 months or so. And that's led to inflation going above 85% in Turkey. So it hasn't really worked very well for them. But for everybody else, but all of the other countries in the G20 are now focused on bringing down inflation, and that means increasing interest rates. And this chart, which dates back to the start of 2019, shows what's been happening with interest rates. And this chart is plotting the relative movement. So the zero line across the top would mean no relative change in interest rates. It doesn't mean that interest rates are 0%. And in line with what we've just discussed, you can see that for the USA, which is shown in blue, the European area, which is shown in red, the United Kingdom in green, and Canada in grey, there was a significant reduction in interest rates during 2020 as the COVID pandemic took hold. And over the course of the last 6 months or so, we have seen a significant increase in interest rates in all of those economies. The only country that has a different trend here is Japan. And the movement in interest rates in Japan is shown by the yellow line, and it does stand out a little, mainly because Japan has had deflationary problems in the past, so its prices haven't been increasing dramatically. It's only been in the last few months that we've started to see the impact feeding through in Japan, and there has been a change in rates. This table shows the actual GDP growth for 2021 and the forecast levels for 2022 and 2023. And these forecasts have been revised as of October 2022. So these are the latest forecasts. You can see that in 2021, the USA achieved growth of 5.7%. It's estimated that growth in 2022 will slow down to 1.6%. And that in 2023, growth will be 1%. So this represents a major slowdown in the USA's economy. If we have a look at the same figures for Europe, you can see that Europe achieved 5.2% growth in 2021. Growth in 2022 is forecast to be 3.1%, and in 2023, 0.5%. And when you look at the breakdown of the countries that contribute to the euro area, you can see that two of those are actually forecast to have negative growth in 2023. Germany is forecasting 0.3% contraction, and Italy's GDP is expected to reduce by 0.2%. And these are the two countries that are most heavily affected by the supply of natural gas from Russia. Both of them have built up large infrastructure that depends upon that Russian gas. They're in the process of stopping buying that gas, changing to LNG. That's putting a lot of pressure on their economy because there are huge costs associated with that. So we're seeing a slowdown for all of the countries in Europe in 2023, but these two countries have been impacted the most. If we look at the United Kingdom, which is no longer part of the European Union following Brexit, in 2021, growth was 7.4%. In 2022, it's forecast to be 3.6%, so less than half of what it achieved in 21. And in 2023, growth is forecast to be 0.3%. Now, I don't know whether or not these forecasts are going to be 100% accurate, because the Bank of England has recently come out and stated that the United Kingdom is likely to go into recession, and that recession could last for 2 years. So the forecasts from the Bank of England are more pessimistic than what we're seeing here from the IMF. Now, for Karen Danner's chart, let's have a look at what's going on with regards to China, India, and Russia. In 2021, China achieved 8.1% growth, which is one of the highest figures on this chart, but it is a fast-developing economy. It is growing very rapidly. Now, that growth is now forecast to reduce to 3.2% in 2022. And that means that the forecast growth is significantly less than half of what it was in 2021. And it's a major problem for a fast-growing economy like China. And in 2023, it's expected that there will be an element of recovery, but growth will still only be 4.4%. So still around about 50% of what was achieved in 2021. So this is a major setback for the Chinese economy. If we look at the situation with India, actual growth was 8.7% in 2021. It's forecast to reduce to 6.8% in 2022 and reduce further to 6.1% in 2023. So again, for a fast-growing economy, these figures are lower than everybody was expecting. Now, if we have a look at the situation for Russia, in 2021, Russia achieved 4.7% growth. The latest forecast for 2022 is a reduction in GDP of 3.4%, and it's expected that there will be a further reduction of 2.3% in 2023. Now, these figures are all based on the latest data that's being released by Russia. However, if you follow the channel, I'm sure you'll be aware that I've put a major question mark over the reliability of those figures. Because if you look at what's happening with regards to oil sales and gas sales, which make up a large percentage of Russia's exports, we're seeing massive falls right now, falls of 20, 30, 40% in their sales volumes. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense that when you've got that level of falling sales in the biggest part of your economy, how that translates to a fall of 3.4% in 2022. It doesn't really stack up. My personal opinion is that I don't think the figures that are coming out from Russia are 100% accurate, and that the actual fall in GDP in 22 and 23 is more likely to be in double digits. So let's have a look at what all that means on an aggregated basis. You can see from this chart that in 2021, the emerging and developing countries achieved 6.6% growth, and that's forecast to reduce to 3.7% in both 2022 and 2023. So this is a material slowdown for these economies, because these economies are meant to be growing at a rapid rate. 5 to 10% growth is not uncommon for these sort of economies. So 3.7% is very pedestrian and does represent a major global slowdown. If we look at the situation for the advanced economies, in 2021, they achieved 5.2% growth. That's expected to fall by more than 50% to 2.4% in 2022, and fall by more than 50% again in 2023 to 1.1%. So you can see clearly here the global slowdown that's expected to take place over the course of the next 12 months or so. And if we now look at the global position, in 2021, the world achieved a 6% growth in GDP. However, that growth is forecast to fall to 3.2% in 2022 and 2.7% in 2023. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because I've been talking a lot in many of my other videos about the potential for a global slowdown, global recession, that 2023 looks like it's going to be a fairly grim year all across the globe. And really, I wanted to put some meat on the bones today, give you some data, because fundamentally, I love to deal in data, to talk to you about figures and facts rather than me just talking generically about what's going on. And what we've seen today is that over the course of the last 18 months, problems have started to appear in the global economy. But those problems have really been heightened by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, because we saw a big spike in prices. We've seen changes to the global supply chain. We're seeing a lot of countries having to change the way they do things. And all of that is adding more costs to those economies. And we're starting to see the pain feeding through, and we're starting to see demand reducing. And that reduced demand is now causing a lot of economies to go backwards. So this isn't just contained to what's happening in Europe. This is all across the world right now. And the world economy is now facing a two-pronged problem. Firstly, we've got high levels of inflation. And that's a problem because nobody wants to have runaway prices, because it impacts on the cost of living and the standard of living. So the main way of dealing with that is to hike interest rates, rack them up, stop everybody spending, bring prices back down. But the main problems that we've got right now is that there's a global slowdown going on. So if you keep on raising interest rates, that's going to make that situation worse, because people will have less money, they'll spend less money, and so the slowdown starts to pick up pace. But if you don't increase those interest rates, what's going to happen to prices? Will prices ever come back down if you leave interest rates where they are? Well, eventually prices will come back down if we go into a recession, because by definition, a recession means that there's less spending in the economy, therefore there's less demand, and therefore prices will eventually hit those levels that everybody wants. But I think we're facing a period now, over the next 3 to 6 months, definitely, possibly even the next 9 months, where the slowdown that's being caused by the recession won't be quick enough to bring prices back down, because a lot of those prices are being influenced by what's happening in Ukraine and the global and macro issues. So high oil prices and high food prices are being caused by global demand and supply, not what's happening on an individual country level. So there is a very real possibility that over the course of the next 6 months, we might have a combination of high interest rates and high inflation and a recession. And that's really not much fun for anybody, because it means you've got less money, but things are still really expensive. And in normal circumstances, the world economy would find its equilibrium, and then we could start rebuilding. But the main fly in the ointment that we've got right now is that Russia is still involved in its conflict. It hasn't withdrawn from Ukraine. The war is still going on. And as long as that war continues, we're going to have volatility, we're going to have issues with regards to global supplies, and we're going to have high prices. So we've got a problem, because if that war does carry on for the whole of 2023, it could make the recession worse, it could mean that prices stay higher for longer, and it could mean more misery and more pain for everybody around the world. Not just the people in Ukraine, who are obviously having the worst time ever, and nobody would want to swap places with them, but for everybody else in the world, this could be a fairly horrible year. 2023 has the possibility to be one of the worst economic environments that we've seen for the last 20 years all around the world. So hopefully you found today's episode useful, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said and the way that I've said it, please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.